Hour number two of Midday with Trey and BK. I'm Trey Elling. Brad Kellner is not here today. That's because he is on his way up to Dallas right now for Texas OU. Not only the game itself tomorrow, but also the roundtable being hosted by the Horn in just an hour. In an hour, it starts the broadcast live from Twin Peaks up in Addison. I believe BK will be a part of that, as well as the official roundtable from 3 to 6:30, along with Chad Hastings, Aaron Hogan, Rod, of course, BK. I think Craig is going to stop by for a couple of minutes. And Kevin Dunn will be back here in Austin holding the fort down from this studio. Adam Wagner, as always, is behind the glass. You can text us at 337-3776 and give us a follow on Twitter at Courtesy Wave, at Not the Fake Wags, and at Joseph Cook 89. That's the handle of not only our normal Friday noontime guest, but actually a guy who's helping me out in studio over the next hour. He is Joe Cook, a guy who covers pretty much every Longhorn sport under the sun for Inside Texas. Read his work at InsideTexas.com. Make sure to check out the podcast that he and BK are doing through the Everyone Gets a Trophy umbrella. It's the 1-0 podcast. You can actually find it on every podcast platform by looking for Everyone Gets a Trophy. Joe, thank you for joining me in studio. How you doing, man?
Doing all right. It's trying to stay warm, which is a little bit out of the ordinary for us, but it's football weather, and it's October, and that means best sports time of the year. This Saturday is going to be big. Got Texas-Oklahoma, and then we got game one of the LCS coming up, and so heart rate's going to be going crazy for most of the game on Saturday for me.
I would be remiss not to congratulate you as an Astros fan for the win last night. And it's understandable why the fan base was squeezing a little bit after the Rays are able to tie that series up at two games apiece after the two games out in Florida. But the Rays don't have a guy by the name of Gerrit Cole starting for them in a Game 5. And my goodness, he was as good as advertised heading into last night and then some.
Yeah, the thing the Rays had to do would be to beat three of the best pitchers in the league three times. And you were going to see one of those three guys multiple times, most likely two. You saw that with Verlander going on 3 days rest. You saw Cole going on it with, I think, 4 days rest. You have to beat these three great pitchers multiple times in order to get past the Astros. And Tampa Bay almost did. They had help. They did it at home. They did it in the way that they've done all year with the bullpen and just cycling guys over and over and Kevin Cash pulling all the right strings. But I think Frank Thomas said it on the post game last night. Tampa Bay ran out of home games, but they also ran into Gerrit Cole. And when that guy's pitching like he is right now, just being unbelievable. I can't remember seeing somebody like him throw 100 time after time after time, come back with 90, with the off speed being 90, and then bam, right back at 100 at your eyes. Just he's been unbelievable and worth every prospect they traded and worth every penny that they might have to pay to get him back for next year.
No question about that. And we'll actually get into the historic numbers that Gerrit Cole has been putting up throughout the course of the season, but more specifically over the last two postseason games in a little bit. But we do also have to get into Texas OU, the latest edition. It is in less than 24 hours now. Tomorrow at 11 is the official kickoff on Fox. You can, of course, hear that game across the Austin Radio Network as well. Pre-game live from the State Fairgrounds beginning at 7. You've covered multiple Texas OU games now, Joe. You've gone to some as a fan as well when you're a student at UT. What are you looking forward to most with tomorrow's game?
Just off the field?
On the field, whichever you would like to go there.
I guess off the field, always got to check out the fried food. My favorite, personal favorite, fried Oreos, just the presentation, the texture, flavor, all that stuff they do for the fried Oreos. I think it beats every other fried thing they make. And that's not to say that fried Snickers aren't great. I haven't tried fried butter, not sure if I will. Haven't tried fried beer, not sure if I will. But fried Oreos are the best. The atmosphere is unbelievable. You just see a bunch of people, you know, orange walk by, then crimson and cream walk by. And it's just a gathering of so many different people for split right down the middle. There's literally nothing like it in college football. So off the field, looking forward to that. Another thing I mentioned on me and BK's podcast was I like the bands. For some reason, before the game, whenever the Texas band marches out there and the drum line goes and the drum major goes to the 50, somehow a switch flips within the crowd, and it's already a big atmosphere. But for some reason, just seeing that going and the white jeans and the white duster, the drum major walk out to the 50, somehow that flips a switch. And the same thing with Oklahoma when their drum major does that weird limbo walk 55 yards across the field. It sends the Crimson and Cream side into a frenzy. But on the field, I'm looking forward to the battle in the trenches. And I know skill talent is huge on both sides for both these teams. Oklahoma's wide receivers, their quarterback, obviously, their running back. Same with Texas with Colin Johnson coming back and Sam Ehlinger being a mainstay. But this is not the best Oklahoma. It's still a great line, but it's facing injuries and it doesn't have the four draft picks like it had last year. And I think Texas can find disruption on that, create disruption on that defensive line to make things a little bit more difficult for Jalen Hurts. And then on the other side, I think Texas's offensive line has performed very well this year, but I think Oklahoma's defensive line is playing pretty well, especially considering where it's been these past few years. Ronnie Perkins is a very legitimate threat on the outside, and I know Sam Cosmi faced a legitimate threat in Kalavon Chasen earlier in the year and had a nice performance against him, but Ronnie Perkins, you know, they've started talking to each other a little bit kind of through the media with Sam Cosmi saying he's not that special and Ronnie Perkins saying, I can't remember exactly what he said, but having his own response. Neville Gallimore is playing really well. Mm-hmm. He's going to be a big challenge for Zach Shackelford, so I think the skill talent is always going to be great in this game, but the battle in the trenches, and I know it seems really cliche, whoever wins up front is going to win the game, but there's a lot of intrigue there just because it's a little bit more even where the margins have been very wide between the units these past few years.
You know, it surprised me a little bit to hear the Texas players talking noise like they were earlier this week, and perhaps it was inspired by the fact that they were being asked very specific questions and they were just giving honest answers to. But this is also a program that under Tom Herman has let the other side do a lot more of the talking while they let their actions speak for them whenever the two teams actually meet up on the field. And on one hand, while I'm normally not crazy about that because it gives bulletin board material to the other side, this is Texas OU week.
Right.
So if you need bulletin board material, you're probably already losing the battle to begin with. So I don't have as big of an issue with it as I think I would most normal weeks.
Exactly. And guys like BJ Foster, you know, he said, oh, I forgot what he said. He better slide. I think that was the quote. I mean, have you watched BJ Foster play? If I was one-on-one with him, you know, me not being an elite athlete like Jalen Hurts is, I would probably run backwards and not slide just to remove all risk. So I understand where they're coming from. And like you said, you don't need bulletin board material for this week. You're playing for a trophy. You're playing the best team in your conference. You're playing your heated rival for 100 plus years. There really shouldn't be anything that, you know, they have to say or Oklahoma has to say to really add to the motivation. But B.J. Foster, I mean, he's a confident player. He's been a confident player ever since he was in high school. Looking on it real quick, I think his Twitter handle is still No Fear 2. I think that says a lot about B.J. Foster. And then Sam Cosmi, he's got reason to be, like I mentioned, he's got reason to be confident. He's had a phenomenal year. He's just coming off a great rushing performance at Morgantown, you know, including a touchdown. So, yeah, it's a little bit out of character to see the guys talk a little bit more. Usually, like they said, like you said, it's a lot of, you know, we have a great opponent coming in, can't wait to play them, that type of thing. But this year, yeah, they're starting to say, we're ready to take these guys on. We're ready to give them our best hit and accept theirs too and battle it out for 60 minutes.
Regarding the Oklahoma offensive line, it's been interesting to go back and watch how they have performed this year and also to speak with people who have watched this whole thing play out really closely, guys who are not only fans of OU, but also who cover that football team for a living. While on the surface, it would seem like this has been a good group, considering that they lost four or five starters last year to the NFL. Get Creed Humphrey back. He is arguably one of, if not the best center in college football. But four guys around him, they didn't have a chance to gel in spring ball because Creed Humphrey missed all of spring with an undisclosed injury. And you throw the two starting tackles missing time last week versus the Jayhawks, possibly this week as well, into that equation. But you talk to people who cover this football team, they've actually been somewhat unhappy with how the O-line has performed this year, which is maybe a little bit surprising to hear considering that this is a offense that averages nearly a first down every time they run a play. But at the same time, the points that they bring up are, look, South Dakota pushed this offensive line around at times in game two of the season. Last week versus Kansas, the Jayhawks had their way with the OU offensive line far too many times early on in this game when it was still more of a football game before Kansas pulled away in the second half. Based on all of that, the possibility of missing one, if not both, starting tackles, do you think that we see Todd Orlando maybe try and press the issue a little bit more in terms of bringing a blitz to not only make the O-line uncomfortable, but force Jalen Hurts into more quick decisions?
I think that's the key, and I think the key to that is Jalen Hurts. Yes, you want to attack that offensive line and try to make them have to work for it, but Jalen Hurts, when he's not in a clean pocket, when he doesn't have time to just hit the one guy that is open, he's not looked very good this year, and there's a balance to be found. Do you want Jalen Hurts running and out in space running? Probably not. But do you want him probably making throws on the run and having to read on the move, something that, you know, throughout his career has been a struggle for him? Probably. So I wouldn't be surprised if you see some more pressure from Texas. I know you saw the reports from Anwar Richardson that Chris Ash, the former Rutgers head coach, made a trip to Austin. Bruce Feldman said he's only visiting and he plans to visit a bunch of other places, but it's kind of beside the point. Chris Ash is in Austin, and Chris Ash runs a four-down defense, or at Rutgers, I believe, ran a four-down defense with the same quarters back in. So maybe they're going to add some of that element to the game. And you can do that still playing your three-down defensive lineman with a B-backer. You can add that fourth guy and still have three-down linemen as part of it. But I think the key is maybe not so much attacking the offensive line, but attacking Jalen Hurts through that offensive line to muddy his reads and make sure that whenever he's throwing, it's not to the first guy or that he's got to resist some pressure and able to do so.
The Longhorn defense has started to do something a little bit different personnel-wise in the last couple of games regarding a guy that you could argue is playing as well as anybody on that side of the football, and that's Joseph Osai. He has started playing more of a hybrid position that actually has him lining up closer to where you normally see secondary guys. Mm-hmm. For anybody listening right now who has maybe spotted that but doesn't quite understand what is going on, what is happening with Joseph Osai on defense over these last few games?
So I noticed that too up in West Virginia. I kind of thought that, oh man, Neil Brown is scheming Joseph Osai out of the play. And when you're playing inside linebacker, you really can't be schemed out unless you're playing in man coverage. But if you're playing kind of that outside linebacker, or we call it super nickel at inside Texas, then you can be motioned out. And they did that at times at West Virginia. But the thing is he's so athletic. He may be the best pure athlete on this defense, right by DeMarvion Overshown and B.J. Foster, to where he can do a lot of the things asked of him in space and in addition to when he's rushing the passer. So I think what you're going to see is him asked to do a whole lot again this week. You'll see him probably split out a little bit just because that's where the formation takes him. But the thing that's allowed Texas to do that is the surge of Juwan Mitchell at middle linebacker. Yeah. That guy, number six in the middle, I think from Butler Community College, same place as Jacoby Jones, second string defensive lineman. That guy has really made a name for himself in this early part of the season. And I think, you know, I first really started to notice how well he was playing in the Rice game, which is when he got most of his big snaps. And it's also because when you're playing against Rice, you can have four or five linebackers on the field instead of four or five defensive backs. So he got his opportunity, and facing an offense that likes to do things old school and run between the tackles, he was reading and finding it and doing everything right. And then as Texas has kind of gotten into playing some more passing-oriented teams, Big 12 teams, he still held his own and has done very well playing that middle linebacker spot. So a big reason why Joseph Osai is able to bounce out and do a little bit more on the outside play, that super nickel role, A, he can do it, but B, Juwan Mitchell's making it possible to have him in the middle instead of Osai.
Do you think we see a pretty consistent spy on Jalen Hurts tomorrow? And if so, is Juwan Mitchell the guy who likely receives that assignment?
I'm not exactly sure. I think it could change person to person who is doing the spying, but I think that'd be a smart idea. But at the same time, if you're spying, that means you got one in the middle. And then if you're bringing three, that means you're probably dropping seven, you know, that type of thing.
Yeah.
So it's basically, you know, it always seems like it's pick your poison with the Oklahoma offense. For the past however many years, when they were running hurry up with Sam Bradford, to when now Lincoln Riley showed up, Kyler Murray, Baker Mayfield, D.D. Westbrook, all these guys, it always seems like it's a big game of pick your poison. And you know, we posted several previews on Inside Texas, and I remember one of the comments was, "Oh, wow, that's a sobering read." And my response was, "Yeah, Oklahoma's pretty good at football generally." So I think you'll see a spy probably mixed in some, but that's not something you can hold yourself to every play, or else you're going to leave other options available to the Oklahoma offense.
He is Joe Cook of Inside Texas, helping out throughout the 12 o'clock hour today because BK is on his way to Dallas for the game itself tomorrow, as well as the Horn Roundtable for Texas OU. That is happening at the Twin Peaks in Addison a little bit later on, starting with the Rodcast, which begins here in a little bit less than 45 minutes. Joe, one more thing on defense before we switch over to the offensive side of the ball. We've talked about whether or not Todd Orlando blitzes a little bit more to test the inexperienced OU offensive line, to try and throw Jalen Hurts off of his game, to keep him from being able to get to that first read that your cohort at Inside Texas, Ian Boyd, did a great job of breaking down yesterday. I'm curious to see what the secondary does in terms of coverage. If we see Todd Orlando go with the typical man coverage bit, pressing, maybe allowing a little bit of safety help over the top, or if we do see them try to keep those receivers in front of them by going with more of a cloud or sky coverage, what do you think ends up happening with the secondary more often than not, at least early on in this ballgame before adjustments are made?
Very much depends on how confident they are in DeSean Jamison and Anthony Cook. Those are the guys I expect to be starting out there on Saturday. So it can't be whatever they did against LSU. That's for darn sure. That no matter what they did, whether it was Kobe Boyce, Jalen Green, anybody out there, it didn't work. But I think a lot of the principles that they used against Oklahoma State can prove effective in this game. It didn't seem like there was anything super spectacular about the defense against Oklahoma State. They made sure Tylan Wallace didn't pose much of a threat. They let Dylan Stoner and Landon Wolf, I believe his name, have their catches. But they were able to shut down Chuba Hubbard. He got his stats on volume. They were able to basically limit Tylan Wallace. And Spencer Sanders, when he had a chance, they let him do his thing. But, I mean, you can't stop all three. Now, Oklahoma has way more wide receiver talent than Oklahoma State, and probably a better tactician running that offense, as opposed to a guy who's just fresh out of the Ivy League, and I don't mean graduated. He just coached football there. So I bet you see I still think you see kind of a similar concept, in that they kind of keep it simple. They kind of try to keep everything ahead of them, because as no matter how athletic DeSean Jamison is, no matter how smart and how technical Anthony Cook is, Charleston Rambo and CeeDee Lamb are elite athletes. And at the wide receiver position, that's going to help a lot. And, you know, corner is such a 50-50 position. It's one of those, you know, I mention this all the time. James Harden talked about, you know, if he's on a little cold shooting streak, does he ever look to go and pass somewhere else? No, I'm a shooter. I got to keep doing this. You have to have the same mentality at cornerback. But if they keep getting burnt, that mentality won't do anything. I think Todd Orlando will try to make sure that the secondary kind of restricts big plays. They may try to make this a red zone battle, which is going to be tougher with Jalen Hurts as opposed to Kyler Murray. But it's something Tom Herman believes his team is really good at, playing defense in the red zone. And that kind of proved itself a little bit against West Virginia. I think they had some short fields and had to force Evan Staley to make some field goals instead. So I think you try to see – I don't know if they'll match up man-to-man, because no matter how athletic DeSean Jamison is, CeeDee Lamb is still really good and could probably blow by him. But I think you'll try to see a pretty simple coverage scheme that tries to limit the big plays, keep everything in front, and then make Oklahoma win inside the 20s, which is something that they can do with their running game. They couldn't do with their Kyler Murray running game last year, but rewatching that Tech game, they had a formation where they had, I think, two tight ends and three running backs. Jalen Hurts is not a running back, but in that formation, he was. It was a run all the way, basically a goal line. Quarterback's going to run it, and you better try and stop it. So their red zone offense has that added element with Jalen Hurts now, so that'll be a big test to see if Texas can continue to do what it believes is really good at in playing defense in the red zone.
All great points, specifically the possibility of these OU wide receivers running past the Longhorn defensive backs, because that's been an issue for this secondary all year long, is the receivers getting behind them with the opportunity for a big play. Now, fortunately for Texas, they've run into a few quarterbacks who haven't been able to capitalize on that. Even going back to last week's game versus West Virginia, there were throws that Austin Kendall had at his disposal that if he had hit his guy even close to in stride, it would have been a big gain, if not a touchdown. Fortunately, that wasn't the case. Oklahoma and Jalen Hurts, they are not going to miss those throws tomorrow.
Right, especially if he has time, if he has a clean pocket, he's got arm strength, he's got the ability to see, oh, heh. That guy's wide open. There's nobody within 10 yards of him. Better throw it to him. And they, I mean, that's against any team, but especially against these Oklahoma receivers, that's something you can't have happen. And I think the key is getting some pressure on Jalen Hurts, because if those guys are open but he can't see them, it doesn't really make much of a difference no matter how open they get if he can't deliver the ball to them.
He is Joe Cook of Inside Texas, hanging out for the rest of the hour, helping out because BK is on his way up to Big D. Coming up next, we get to Tinder time as well as Shooting the Bull. Going to go ahead and tell you right now, Shooting the Bull today is going to be allowing Joe to wax poetic more on his Houston Astros, who have moved on to the ALCS after a thrilling victory over the Rays last night. Gerrit Cole doing some dominant things throughout the season, but especially this postseason. We'll get into some of those numbers and Shooting the Bull coming up next here on the Midday Show on the Horn. Back here on Midday with Trey and BK. No Brad Kellner. He is, I'm guessing he's in Dallas by now. I keep saying driving to Dallas. Certainly by now he has passed through Waco, probably made the stop at Health Camp.
Do you not have him on Find My Friends?
I do not have him on Find My Friends.
Man, is he not on the Snap Map either?
Hold on a second. What is Find My Friends?
It's an iPhone
app.
I've
just dated myself.
It's an Apple app to where you can basically, if you have somebody that you don't mind sharing your location with and saying, hey, I'm here, then I'm surprised your wife hasn't made you turn it on.
Whoa. Yeah, that's a little bit creepy. Now, the wife bit is understandable, but just general friend locator, like that seems a little bit stalkerish. But then again, we're in an era where nothing is sacred anymore.
You have to accept it, so you can have it so where other people can't see it. But my buddy's hanging out in Chandler, Arizona right now.
So how many people are able to locate you at any moment?
Let's see. I've got my mom has it, and right now I share with 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and only one of them's in Austin, so it doesn't really matter that much.
So your mom constantly knows where you're at?
She looks.
I don't like that.
I got nothing to hide.
No, I feel you there, brother.
is BK one of
BK,
the friends?
I do not track where BK is, unfortunately.
Okay.
But do you want to track where BK is
no,
at all hours of the day?
I want nothing to do with where BK is, especially on weekends.
I'm either on campus or I'm probably at home. So.
That's true. You live a very busy life covering all the sports for the University of Texas over at Inside Texas. InsideTexas.com. At JosephCook89 is his Twitter handle. He is filling in for the rest of the hour very graciously. Going to talk a little bit Astros here in a second, and I think that includes our Tinder Time headline today. Please hit it, Wags. And Tinder Time is sponsored Digital BK. Please tell
Allstead's
the people.
Allstead's beers are carefully made using only 4 ingredients: hops, barley, yeast, and artesian spring water. Authentic German beer from the great state of Texas. It's Allstead beer.
All righty, Wags. What is the headline for today, sir?
Artesian. The headline is just the tip.
What are you bringing?
It
your,
is not. No.
Are you bringing your Wagner Wire bit to the Midday Show airwaves?
No fantasy stuff here, gentlemen. No
All
fantasy
right.
stuff. That would be boring radio, I would think.
Ah, you
only
know,
for Sunday.
Depends.
It's reserved for Sunday.
All right, so I'm going to swipe right here. Joe, you swiping right to let's, just the tip?
Let's see it.
Let's go to the American League Divisional Series between the Houston Astros and the Tampa Bay Rays. Now, there was a little bit of reports earlier in the week that, or matter of fact, that surfaced just a couple of minutes or a couple of hours ago, that Tyler Glasnow may have even been tipping his pitches going into Game 5, early in the Game 5 last night. So to me, guys, especially, I guess this is more directed towards Joe being, you know, the seam head and the residential Astros fan here for the Midday Show.
Mm-hmm.
Did you see anything that Tyler Glasnow was giving away? you know, he says, going back on it now, he says, looking back, I do see exactly what they were talking about, but I didn't pick up on anything, and I'm pretty avid at when it comes to picking up on, you know, minor stuff for attention to detail.
I didn't see anything from Glasnow himself, but I saw Alex Bregman take a great slider or great breaking pitch and not even think to swing at it, not even think to get ready to swing at
it. Which he denied, clearly.
Right. And then there's an article in the Houston Chronicle by Hunter Akins, and Glasnow basically details it. He said when his glove was tilting down, that was one pitch he was tipping. I can't remember which one. And when his glove was tilted up, that was the other one. And he said something like he went into the locker room, saw a bunch of texts on his phone. The video crew with the Tampa Bay Rays told him, like, hey, you're tipping your pitches, and goes out the next inning and does fine. And the Rays bullpen did fine for the rest of the game, with the exception of those late home runs and little late rallies. So, I mean, tipping pitches, if you're gonna tell people what you're going to throw, right, you're going to get punished for it.
You leave the TV on, you're going to watch. And I guess to piggyback off of that question, guys, a lot of, I guess, flack and the social justice warriors on, you know, social media are sitting there calling the Astros cheaters for taking this tip and going with it. I don't see this as any cheating at all, man. Like I just said, you leave the TV on, I'm watching.
The Astros have found themselves in some signal, like Patriot Spygate type thing. They had a guy who had a credential, or maybe didn't have a credential, with the Astros, who were taking pictures with his
that old guy.
Yeah, and so I guess there's a thinking around the league, like, oh, the Astros are at it again. They're back to their old dastardly ways. When it's really just, hey, man, if you're gonna tell me you're throwing a fastball, I'm gonna hit a fastball. It's not like stealing signs, which also you should change your signs before anybody figures them out.
That's a tactical advantage. You should look to try and pick up on something like that.
Right. Yeah. If you're gonna have a big old sign that says, "Hey, 88 mile an hour curveball incoming," I'm probably gonna use that.
Yeah, there's nothing underhanded about that. And The Athletic had a really good article on the notion that Glasnow was tipping his pitches, and he wholeheartedly admitted it after the game, whereas the Astros players were like, no, he wasn't tipping pitches. We were just being aggressive early in counts, looking for fastballs and things like that, even though we hit a couple of breaking balls early in counts as well. But it's fair game, and it's up to the pitcher, and it's also up to the team to get him to change that really quickly, even if it means burning one of your mound visits a couple batters into the game to make sure he changes that, versus continuing to allow the run total that it ultimately did in the first inning.
This quote from Kevin Kiermaier in the Houston Chronicle article: "He's too good to get hit like that." It's pretty true.
Yeah.
It really is, especially with how he pitched basically in every other inning of the series. So he was too good to get hit like that, and so he was tipping his pitches.
I think the more telling sign to me was what you alluded to with Bregman just laying off that nasty, I mean, not even flinching, not even trying to offer any type of take at it. And usually it's pretty enticing when you know you're running on some high heat, and then all of a sudden you get that low nasty slider, you're gonna go chasing. He didn't even budge.
Yeah, thank you for today's Tender Time, Wags. We're actually gonna continue the Astros conversation for a few minutes in Shooting the Bull. Shooting the Bull, sponsored by Audio Visual Consultations. You know the drill. Go to avconsultations.com to figure out how Tom McKay can hook you up like he has hooked so many homes and businesses up here in Central Texas over 31 plus years now. He's the dude. I love that guy. Biggest hockey fan in all of Austin, if not this entire state. Find out why so many people are fond of the work Tom McKay has done in their homes or businesses by having him come out to your home or business. Tom McKay, Audiovisual Consultations, avconsultations.com. All right, the Astros did win it last night, 6-1, setting up an ALCS showdown with the New York Yankees. That series begins tomorrow evening. And it started off with 4 runs in the first inning for the Astros. Had to have been a big sigh of relief for Houston fans watching George Springer single to start things off. That certainly set the table for his lineup mates to not only drive him in, but each other as well. Those 4 first-run innings were more than enough for Gerrit Cole, who was spectacular once again. Goes 8 innings, 2 hits, 1 run on a homer, 2 walks, 10 strikeouts, actually finished with a .57 ERA in the ALDS. And if it seemed like Gerrit Cole was pitching in an especially dominant manner? Well, guess what? He was. Historically dominant may be a better way to phrase just how good Gerrit Cole was over these last two starts. Of course, he started games 2 and 5, and in that time, and these stats are from The Athletic, he faced 54 batters, struck out 25 of them, allowed 6 total hits over 2 starts, 1 run, 52 swings and misses, and an opponent slash line of 118, that's the average, 167 is the on-base percentage, and 196 is the slugging percentage. That is absurd for even a couple of innings, much less 2 starts in the playoffs. The 25 Ks over 2 playoff starts, that's the second most ever behind Bob Gibson, who had 27 in the 1968 World Series. The 52 swings and misses in one series is the most in the pitch count era, breaks the record held by Mike Mussina, who had 46 in the 1997 ALCS. And he struck out 25 of 54 hitters, as I mentioned. That's a 46% strikeout rate.
This is great.
Second highest ever after Mussina, who did it in that the ALCS rather, with 47%. Now, beyond playoff history, Joe, 11 straight games with double-digit strikeouts. That's an MLB record. Nobody has done that before. He now has 351 strikeouts on the year. That is the most by a righty in Major League Baseball in the last 45 years. The last guy to have more strikeouts than this as a right-handed pitcher, Nolan Ryan, with 367 in 1974. And, oh, by the way, the Astros have not lost a Gerrit Cole start since July 12th and have not lost a Gerrit Cole start at home since May 22nd. The guy has gone 5 months without losing a baseball game. He is 18-0 in the last 5 months. The last time you saw a guy spend a single season winning so many games in a row, you have to go back to 1912 for that, with a guy named Rube Marquard. Mm-hmm. Not making that name up. It sounds like a made-up name, but Rube Marquard went 19 straight in 1912.
I mean, him and Verlander were just neck and neck all year. Both had phenomenal years, but I think last night kind of proved that this year that Gerrit Cole has had has been all different sorts of special. You mentioned Bob Gibson. He was so dominant, he was so good that they had to lower the pitcher's mound because of how dominant he was. I don't think they're going to do that for Gerrit Cole, but he's putting up these numbers, equaling these guys who pitched. Bob Gibson, you're the pitcher that 68 year. Like, that is just some... He's elevating himself among these names that if you got one of their baseball cards, you would run around the block and be exuberant because of, oh, he just got his rookie card. He's putting up numbers that are going to be on the back of his card that are historically dominant, and it's going to net him a ton of money in this upcoming offseason.
So real quick, before we hit the break here, what's your prediction on Astros-Yankees?
Oh, man. I looked up Southwest, Orbitz, Kayak, Greyhound, and Amtrak to see if there's a reasonable way to get to New York. Don't know if it's going to happen, but man, this is the matchup I think everybody wanted to see in the AL all
Definitely.
Year. I know the Twins had a phenomenal year, but with the way the Yankees are, with Stanton, with Judge, with Severino, I believe, and then you have the Astros with historically good hitters and pitchers, this is what everybody wanted to see. I know a couple years ago it went 7, and every game was won by the home team. It really would not surprise me to see this series go to 7 again. But you know, like I mentioned, it's tough to beat Greinke, Cole, Verlander 3 times, and then it's tough to beat one of those 3 a second time. They may not get a look at Cole twice until that game 7. But it's tough to beat those 3 pitchers twice, especially when they're in their playoff mode, considering what Verlander did a couple of years ago against the Yankees in a deciding game 7. So I could definitely see the Astros taking this one in 7 and facing the best of the NL.
Speaking of the NL, do you have a good feeling with the Nationals or the Cardinals?
See, the Nationals are, it's tough to pick against these teams that are kind of these, hey, why not us now? Everybody thought the Dodgers were, as if they got past the Braves, which another problem, they were going to probably be the, if they got past the Braves, they'd be in the World Series, obviously. The kind of the same thing with the Yankees and Astros. Probably everybody wanted to see Dodgers-Braves happen on the NL side.
Yeah.
And man, a wrench was definitely thrown into those plans. So,
no question.
After watching Strasburg, after watching Scherzer, the Nats have these playoff caliber pitchers kind of similar to the Astros. They got two of them. They also have a rookie or a really young guy who's just on fire right now in Soto. And then it's got the right amount of veteran leadership with Zimmerman and Kendrick, who hit that huge grand slam. I don't know. And the Cardinals obviously have been doing this for a long time. They know how to win World Series, even if Tony La Russa is gone with the guys they have on that roster. But I don't know. It's kind of hard to pick against kind of the plucky upstarts and see them and see the way that the city of Washington, D.C. is kind of organized and galvanized behind the team. They did it with the Caps. They're not doing it with their football team right now, but they're probably going to do it with their baseball team. And I could definitely see the Nationals pulling it out based upon having guys like Strasburg and Scherzer available to them.
After all, your team was the plucky upstarts a couple years ago. We saw how that one turned out. I have the Astros and the Nationals facing off in the World Series, too. And that'll be a fun series because those are two very similar baseball teams. Great starting pitching, great lineups, pretty much top to bottom, fun lineups to watch, and maybe questionable things going on in the back end in those bullpens. So that'll be a fun one to watch starting tonight. The NLCS gets going tonight. The ALCS gets going tomorrow. Those series should take a little bit more than a week unless there are sweeps or 4-1 finales. He is Joe Cook filling in for Brad Kellner for one more segment. Joe Cook, of course, can be read at InsideTexas.com. Coming up next, we wrap it up with more Texas OU talk. What about the Texas offense versus that Oklahoma defense? Is the OU defense improved? Probably by a little bit, but is it enough? We hope not. You're listening to Midday with Trey and BK on the Horn. Final segment of today's midday program means it's time to wrap it up, which is sponsored by Paul's Motor Works. If you are having auto issues, let Paul's Motor Works help you out. They're on 2222 across from Vandegrift High School. Tell them BK sent you in, and they might even hook you up with a little bit of a discount. Before we get into the wrap-up, I need to let you know one more time, BK not a part of today's midday show. He is up in Dallas getting ready for the Texas OU Roundtable. That's happening live from Twin Peaks in Addison. Rod Babers doing the rodcast from there from 1 to 3. That's followed by the actual roundtable with Chad, Rod, BK, Aaron Hogan, Craig Way may even stop by. That's from 3 until 6:30. Very thankful to Joe Cook for helping me out throughout the noon hour talking Texas OU, Houston Astros baseball, and now back to Texas OU, Joe. And speaking specifically about this Longhorn offense, is there a concern for you tomorrow? Do you feel comfortable enough with this group that they are going to get their job done, that it really does fall on the defense, being opportunistic in terms of making stops and maybe the occasional turnover?
I feel pretty confident. I think you mentioned that, you know, everybody kind of believes and has seen that the Oklahoma defense is improved under Alex Grinch, and they've got good players, especially on the D-line and especially with Kenneth Murray playing linebacker. But this is still a Texas offense that in Bill Connelly's SP Plus right now, which I know may have a blind spot for how Texas wins games, it still has the Texas offense as fourth in its rankings, its offensive rankings. I think it's in the 60s for its defense. So this is still an elite offense. It's two elite offenses going against each other, number four in his rankings versus number one in his rankings. This is going to be – it may actually live up to the shootout aspect of the game's name.
This also feels like one of those games that Sam Ellinger shows everybody why he is considered such a special football player, not just because he gets up for the bigger moments. We saw it in the Sugar Bowl last year, but he's a lifetime Longhorn. He bleeds orange. He understands the magnitude of this game, and it's that much more important to him than it is just about anybody else who has ever played in this game before. And I know that's a big statement, but I've also watched Sam play in this game on two other occasions, and you see how badly he wants it.
Yeah, when he was thrust into the starting position in his freshman year in 2017, 278 passing yards, 106 rushing yards, 22 attempts, kind of they threw everything on him because he was their best chance to win, and he almost pulled it out against Baker Mayfield. And then this past year, just hitting everything, Lil Jordan Humphrey, Colin Johnson, running it in himself a couple times. And then Oklahoma, the conference championship game, turned in another really solid performance, but took a couple sacks and had a late turnover that really sealed it. So this is a game that, you know, and a team that he's performed well against several times in his career. He spoke about how, you know, the excitement he has in playing in this game and playing in big games. And I really expect for that to continue and for him to go into this game prepared to win it like he has been in these past couple games.
If there is a question for me with this Texas offense right now, it is, what do we get out of Colin Johnson tomorrow, and how long does it take him to get going? This guy's missed, the last three-plus games now with a hamstring issue. Seemed like he might have been able to play last week versus West Virginia if they really needed him, but they wanted to rest him one more week. Mm-hmm. He's a senior, so he's played in this game on three other occasions now, so that hopefully won't be that big of a deal. But do you believe that there will be any rust that Colin Johnson's having to shake off through at least the first couple of series?
Maybe a little bit, but when you're going against Trey Brown and Parnell Motley, that rust can probably come off pretty quickly. Remember, this is the guy who set a record for Big 12 championship game receiving yard total against this very similar OU secondary. It may take him a little bit of time to shake off the rust, but I'm real confident in Colin Johnson and his, not only him and his ability, but just how he affects the entire offense. He's going to make it so you can't really dedicate as much attention to Devin Duvernay in the slot, because you have to respect what Colin Johnson offers you on the outside. And Malcolm Epps and Marcus Washington, for the talent they have, just don't have that same ability that Colin Johnson does. So it sounds like your question may be about Colin Johnson. My question, and something Brad and I have talked about this week, is who's really the best running back on this team? Is it going to be Keyonte Ingram? Is it going to be Rashawn Johnson? Is Rashawn Johnson able to be trusted at this point going into a big game? You know, with all the implications and everything around it, is he able to be trusted getting 10, 15 carries or so, and especially carries in crunch time? Obviously, the fact last week that he had, 20-something carries on the road to basically wear the game down, break 100 yards, that's got to make you think that he can do this again. But you're wondering, which running back room are you going to get? Are you going to get the one with Keyonte Ingram, who's patiently finding holes and then bursting through them and then finding yards that way? Are you going to get Rashawn Johnson making yards when yards may not be blocked for him there? Or what are you going to get? I think that, more so than the receivers, is what I'm looking at a little bit more.
So based on that, who do you think starts the game at running back and who ends up with more carries when it's all said and done?
I think Keyonte Ingram starts the game. Okay. I don't think you've seen anything or heard anything that's going to make Tom Herman want to change that. At the same time, if you've got a struggling guy who, you know, has been very boom or bust in these last couple of weeks, putting him on the bench and saying, hey, you're number two behind a freshman, behind a quarterback, may not be a big confidence booster for him. So I think you're definitely going to see Keyonte Ingram. If this offensive line can do what it wants to, the indecisive running that it looks like when Keyonte Ingram isn't good could turn into patient running, what happens when he is good and has those games like he had against Oklahoma State.
Real quick, what's the score tomorrow, Joe?
Texas covers. I don't know if they win. I got 38-30
OU. 38-30
OU.
Wags has Texas winning. You know what? I have
Take
Texas
the money
winning
line,
too.
Baby.
I have Texas winning by a field goal just like last year. That's it for today's Midday Show. Thank you to Bob Stoops for joining me in the 11 o'clock hour. And thank you a ton to Joe Cook for filling in for BK in the noon hour. Make sure to follow him at JosephCook89. Read his work at InsideTexas.com. Have a great weekend, folks. Enjoy Texas OU. We'll talk to you on Monday. Until then, hook 'em.